Previously on The Mandalorian, sunlight shines over the mud flats of Arvala 7.
When one chooses to walk the way of the Mandalore, you are both hunter and prey.
Mando fights off a group of Trandoshan assailants.
There is one job.
Underworld.
How uncharacteristic of one of your reputation. Is it not the code of the guild that these events are now forgotten?
A Mandalorian shot up the guild on Navarro. Took some high-value target and went rogue.
Mandalorians battle the Bounty Hunters Guild.
Traveling with me, that's no life for a kid.
They'll keep coming.
None will be free until the old ways are gone. Forever.
Mando shuts the child inside his pram. Now, ex-Imperials descend upon Navarro.
You have something I want.
This is the one you hunted, then saved.
Its species can move objects with its mind.
The songs of eons past tell of battles between Mandalore the Great and an order of sorcerers called Jedi. By creed, it is in your care. You must reunite it with its own kind.
I was a foundling. The Mandalorians raised me in the Fighting Corps. I was treated as one of their own.
Did you do this?
No!
Did any survive?
We knew what could happen if we left the covert. Our secrecy is our survival.
Take care of this little one.
This is the way.
The Mandalorian launches with his jetpack. In his arms, the child watches Greef Karga and Cara Dune recede from view. Now, Jawas scatter as Moff Gideon cuts his way out of his crashed TIE fighter. He climbs atop the wreckage and searches the horizon, holding a darksaber. A horizon fades into view, revealing the distant lights of a town at dusk. The Mandalorian approaches from the shadows, the child riding a step behind him in his floating pram. The bounty hunter treads over dirt, his cape fluttering with each step. His suit of Beskar-plated armor glints intermittently as he swaggers beneath pools of light from unseen street lamps, and a red dot glows at the tip of his right gauntlet. The Mandalorian and child arrive at a slum with graffiti-covered walls. Uniquely shaped skyscrapers loom in the distance beyond. Red glowing eyes appear in the darkness, watching the two pass by. Leaning forward in his pram, the child clutches the rim in his tiny clawed hands as he gazes around curiously. The number of predatory eyes multiplies, observing the duo from every recess and alcove. A closer look at some graffiti reveals images of armored troopers and droids. The child turns his head to study the passing mural. The pram floating steadily behind him, the Mandalorian approaches a doorway with a light shining above it. A Twi'lek stands guard in the recess, his thick headtails draped down behind the back of his gold-collared gown.
I'm here to see Gor Koresh.
The doorman eyes the child. He steps aside from the entrance.
Enjoy the fights.
The doorman opens a gate. Trailed by the pram, the Mandalorian makes his way down to a small arena where two green-skinned, pig-faced Gamorreans battle each other with axes in a ring. The armored bounty hunter ambles through an aisle between rows of spectators. A strike from one of the contestants sends a shockwave through his opponent and brings him down to the dusty canvas. The diverse crowd of alien spectators cheers as the fallen Gamorrean rises back up and takes another swing. His opponent dodges and zaps him again. Shockwaves of light emanate from their battle axes as they clash. The Mandalorian walks ringside and takes a seat next to a green-skinned cyclops with thinning hair and large teeth.
You know this is no place for a child.
Wherever I go, he goes.
So I've heard.
The fighters continue to clink battle axes.
I've been quested to bring him to his kind. If I can locate other Mandalorians, they can help guide me. I'm told you know where to find them.
It's uncouth to talk business immediately. Just enjoy the entertainment.
The frightened child's ears fold back as one of the combatants goes down again.
My Gamorrean's not doing well.
Kill him! Finish him!
The injured gladiator rolls out of the way of a deadly axe strike.
You gamble, Mando?
Not when it can be avoided.
Well, I'll bet you the information you seek. That this Gamorrean's gonna die within the next minute and a half. And all you have to put up in exchange is your shiny Beskar armor.
I'm prepared to pay you for the information. I'm not leaving my fate up to chance.
Nor am I.
The Cyclops takes out a blaster and shoots the dominant Gamorrean. The Mandalorian suddenly finds blasters pointed at him point blank from all directions. The rest of the spectators quickly make for the exits.
Thank you for coming to me. Normally I have to seek out remnants of you Mandalorians in your hidden hives to harvest your precious shiny shells. Beskar's value continues to rise. I've grown quite fond of it. Give it to me now, or I will peel it off your corpse.
Tell me where the Mandalorians are, and I'll walk out of here without killing you.
I thought you said you weren't the gambler.
The child sees Mando's gauntlet light up and quickly closes the shell over his pram.
I'm not.
Whistling birds launch into the air and instantly take out the crime boss's four bodyguards. The Mandalorian kicks the pram to safety. The surviving Gamorrean leaps at him from the ring, but the bounty hunter dodges and lets him crash through a bench. The Mandalorian fights off the Twi'lek doorman, as well as two more thugs. One of the assailants punches him in the helmet, then staggers back, nursing his hand. While another attacker swings a club, the Cyclops sneaks out. Drawing a blade, the Mandalorian uses it to stab one henchman, then immediately flings it into the chest of his final foe. He catches sight of the Cyclops escaping. The Mandalorian snatches up a blaster from the floor and unhurriedly pursues him out into the slum. From his gauntlet, he fires a grappling cable around the Cyclops' ankles and trips him up. The Mandalorian then begins reeling him in. He throws the cable around a light pole and hoists him into the air until he's dangling upside down.
All right, stop, stop. I'll tell you where he is. But you must give me your word that you won't kill me.
I promise you will not die by my hand. Now, where is the Mandalorian you know of?
Tatooine.
What?
The Mando I know of is on Tatooine.
I've spent much time on Tatooine. I've never seen a Mandalorian there.
My information is good, I tell you. The city of Mos Pelgo. I swear it by the Gatra.
Tatooine it is, then.
He starts to walk off.
Wait! Mando! You can't leave me like this! Cut me down!
That wasn't part of the deal.
He shoots out the light.
Wait, what are you doing? Mando! I can see! Mando!
In the darkness, red glowing eyes close in on the criminal from all sides. A title appears over black. The Mandalorian. Chapter 9. The Marshal. Cruising through outer space, the Razor Crest approaches the harsh desert planet of Tatooine. As it descends into the atmosphere and flies over a parched mountain range, a Tusken Raider looks up at it from astride his bantha. Cloaked in traditional rags and goggles, his head turns to follow the ship. In Bay 3-5 at the Mos Eisley spaceport, Peli looks up from doing repair work and removes her protective eyewear. Vapor plumes downward from the wings of the Razor Crest as it lowers into the hangar. Hatches fold open in its underbelly to extend its landing gear. Peli casually blows on an engine component in her hand as she watches it make its descent. Her droids promptly gather their pit crew equipment.
All right. Hey! Sorry, gang! Come on! You know he doesn't like droids!
May as well let them have at it. The Crest needs a good once-over.
Oh, so he likes droids now. Well, you heard him. Give it a once-over!
The Mandalorian saunters down from the ramp.
I guess a lot has changed since you were last in Mos.
He shows her the child inside his satchel.
Thank the Force! This little thing has had me worried sick. Come here, you little womp rat!
She scoops him out.
Looks like it remembers me. How much do you want for it? Just kidding, but not really. You know, if this thing ever divides or buds, I will gladly pay for the offspring.
Hey! Watch what you're doing up there! He barely trusts your kind. Well, you want to give all droids a bad name?
One of her droids gets a suction hose stuck to its face.
I'm here on business. I need your help.
Oh, then business you shall have. Care for me to watch this wrinkled critter while you seek out adventure?
I've been quested to bring this one back to its kind.
Oh, wow. I can't help you there. I've never seen any like it. And trust me, I've seen all shapes and sizes in this town.
A Mandalorian armorer has set me on my path. If I can locate another of my kind, I can chart a path through the network of coverts.
You've been the only Mando here for years, from what I can tell.
Where is Mos Pelgo? I'm told there's one there.
Oh, boy, I haven't heard that name in a while.
It's not on any of the maps.
That's because it was wiped out by bandits. Once the Empire fell, it was a free-for-all. I didn't dare leave the city walls. Still don't.
Can you tell me where it used to be?
Depends who's asking. You want to see it?
R5! Bring the map of Tatooine!
Now, take your time. Seriously. I just can't get good help anymore. I don't even know who to complain to. Let's go. Let's go. Waiting. Okay. This is a map of Tatooine before the war. You got Mos Eisley, Mos Espa, and up around this region, Mos Pelgo.
Mando eyes the holographic map.
I don't see anything.
Well, it's there, or at least it used to be. Not much to speak of. It's an old mining settlement. They're gonna see that big hunk of metal long before you land.
You still have that speeder bike?
Sure do. It was a little rusty, but I got it.
Later, he races over a dune on the old speeder bike. The child sits tucked inside his satchel at the rear of the vehicle, his ears flapping in the wind. The Mandalorian barrels around the dry, craggy canyons, leaving a plume of loose sand in his wake. The image wipes away from right to left to reveal the bike now parked near a herd of resting banthas at dusk. The Mandalorian sits among a band of Tusken raiders around a campfire where a carcass roasts on a spit. One of the sand people speaks to him, gesticulating broadly, and he responds in their sign language. Daytime, a bantha skeleton lies half buried in the sand near an outcropping which overlooks the speeder bike tearing across the inhospitable terrain. The Mandalorian cuts a trail across the windswept desert toward a tiny remote outpost. Two rat-sized scurriers rooting around in the sand quickly scatter as he cruises into his destination. The bike's forward-mounted steering vanes lead the way past a few rows of moisture evaporators toward a cluster of adobe clay structures. With his jetpack strapped to his back, the Mandalorian rides slowly and cautiously toward the desolate habitation. A couple of chatting townspeople see him coming down the main drag and quickly go their separate ways. On a planked deck, a workman wheeling a piece of machinery stops and watches him suspiciously. The Mandalorian continues riding down the sandy, unpaved boulevard, his helmeted head swiveling from side to side to take in the unfriendly faces of the inhabitants. Each of the town's structures sits atop foundational decking elevated slightly from the ground. All eyes remain fixed on the armor-plated stranger as he cruises down their main street with his face concealed inside his visored helmet. Seated on some front steps, a gray-bearded man toys with the rags of his clothing as he watches the newcomer glide past. The Mandalorian pulls over in front of another building. Dismounting his bike, he walks around past the child in his satchel. The little green infant watches him with his dewy black eyes. The Mandalorian walks into a saloon and pauses just inside the threshold, silhouetted by the bright haze of sunlight at his back. Scanning the vicinity, he finds himself alone, apart from the leathery-skinned Weequay proprietor. As the two of them approach each other from either side of the bar, the child spies in on them.
Can I help you?
I'm looking for a Mandalorian.
Well, we don't get many visitors in these parts. Can you describe him?
Someone who looks like me.
You mean the Marshal?
Your Marshal wears Mandalorian armor?
Huh? See for yourself.
He indicates the entrance. The Mandalorian turns and sees Boba Fett standing in the doorway, his armor bearing its signature dents and scratches. As the figure swaggers in from the bright haze, the cloth shirt underneath his chest plating is revealed to be a deep burgundy color.
What brings you here, stranger?
I've been searching for you for many parsecs.
Well, now you found me. Weequay, two snorts of Spotska.
The proprietor sets out a netted bottle of the luminescent blue beverage along with two tin cups.
Why don't you join me for a drink?
The person wearing Boba Fett's armor brings the items to a table. Mando remains at the bar, eyeing him warily, his hands hovering close to his holsters. He starts toward the table, then stops in his tracks as the stranger pulls off his tarnished helmet and sets it aside. The man underneath has a thin gray beard and a thick head of hair.
I've never met a real Mandalorian.
Mando just stands there, staring at him.
Heard stories. I know you're good at killing. And probably none too happy to see me wearing this hardware. So, I figure only one of us walking out of here. But then I see the little guy.
The child peers inside a spittoon, then gazes up at him.
And I think, maybe I pegged you wrong.
Who are you?
I'm Cobb Vanth, Marshal of Mos Pelgo.
Where did you get the armor?
Bought off some Jawas.
He drinks his spatchka.
Hand it over.
Grinning, Cobb Vanth puts down his tin cup.
Look, pal, I'm sure you call the shots where you come from, but round here, I'm the one tells folks what to do.
Take it off.
The Mandalorian moves a step closer.
Or I will.
We gonna do this in front of the kid?
He's seen worse.
Right here, then?
Right here.
The two stare each other down. Cobb slowly rises and uses the heel of his boot to slide his chair away from the table. He shifts his weight on his feet, then the two of them stand stock still, squared off with one another. Cobb's right hand twitches slightly in its fingerless glove. The Weequay watches breathlessly from behind the bar. The left side of Cobb's face tenses as he eyes his adversary, whose visored helmet masks his true expression. Suddenly, the saloon begins to shake. The Mandalorian looks around alarmedly. The child watches the spittoon wobble. Still facing the Mandalorian, Cobb raises his index finger, then moves to the door. The Weequay proprietor runs from the bar and flees out a side entrance. The Mandalorian steps to the Marshal's side and gazes out at the quaking town. A windmill begins to churn, rapidly picking up speed. Scurriers perk their heads up from the sand. They flee. A bantha blinks its eyes and flares its nostrils. A young couple flees hand in hand inside a building. All over town, people hurriedly take shelter. One man stays put in a doorway, gazing out at the desert horizon. The blades of the windmill spin furiously, backlit by one of the planet's twin suns. The desert appears to buckle in a straight line, headed right for the town. In its wake, a vaporator sinks in the loose sand. A front porch splinters as the quake barrels down the main street, swallowing up everything in its path. Cobb and the Mandalorian watch it swirl right past them at the saloon, catching glimpses of shark-like fins amid the fog of sand. The massive breach zeroes in on the bantha, drinking from a trough at the far end of town. A huge serpent bursts out of the sandy street and swallows the beast whole. It dives back below the surface and the ground settles in a dusty haze. Cobb looks on, poker-faced, from beside the Mandalorian.
Maybe we can work something out.
He turns on his heel. In the saloon, the child's head pokes up from inside the spittoon. Gripping the rim with one clawed hand, he peers out warily. The townsfolk get to work replacing planks on the decks and settling toppled hardware back into its upright position. A woman uses a soldering tool on a piece of mining equipment.
That creature's been terrorizing these parts since long before Mos Pelgo was established. Thanks to this armor, I've been able to protect this town from bandits, sand people. They look to me to protect them. But a crate dragon is too much for me to take on alone.
Cobb rests his gauntlet on a piece of crumbled foundation and turns to face the Mandalorian.
Help me kill it, I'll give you the armor.
Deal. I'll ride back to the ship, load out of the sand from the sky, use the bantha as bait.
Not so simple. The ship passes above, it senses the vibration, stays underground. But I know where it lives.
How far?
Not far.
The image wipes away from right to left to reveal Mando riding his speeder bike across the open desert. Cobb pulls up alongside him, riding a modified pod engine equipped with a side-mounted saddle. They jet over the expansive flatland toward a range of sandy swells along the horizon. The child peers out from his satchel at the rear of Mando's bike, his pointy green ears flapping in the breeze.
You don't understand what it was like. The town was on its last legs.
It started after we got news of the Death Star blown up. The second one, that is.
At the saloon, a hologram replays footage of the Death Star exploding.
The Empire was pulling out of Tatooine. There was blaster fire over Mos Eisley.
Cobb watches from the bar.
The occupation was over.
As the Weequay smiles, helmeted soldiers pour in from the entrance behind him.
We didn't even have time to celebrate. That very night, the mining collective moved in.
They fan out, brandishing carbines.
Power hates a vacuum, and Mos Pelgo became a slave camp overnight.
As the soldiers open fire on the townsfolk, a view from outside shows the windows flashing red. Cobb ducks behind the bar and finds the Weequay nursing a wound.
Hey, you okay? Come on. Let's get you out of here. Let's go.
Cobb helps him to his feet and out the side door. As they split up, Cobb jumps from the deck and briefly loses his footing in the sand. A townsperson escapes from the saloon but is quickly shot down by an emerging soldier. Cobb hides behind a speeder and waits for the soldier to go back inside.
I lit out. Took what I could from the invaders. Grabbed a Camtono. I had no idea it was full of Silicax crystals.
He runs off with the security container.
I guess every once in a while, both sunshine on a womp rat's tail.
In the blazing hot light of day, Cobb staggers through the desert with the cylindrical Camtono weighing him down in one hand.
I wandered for days. No food, no water.
He collapses in the sand. Planting the Camtono on its base, he uses it to try to steady himself.
And then
a shadow glides over him.
I was saved.
He looks up to see a Jawa sandcrawler eclipsing one of the suns. Viewed from a distance, he appears as a tiny speck dwarfed by the huge mobile fortress as it rolls to a stop. Later, inside, he drinks deeply from a skin. A Jawa works a control on the top of the Camtono and gets it to open. The little scavengers swarm around and grab handfuls of pink crystals from within. One of them brings Cobb a rifle-shaped item, which he waves off disinterestedly.
The Jawas wanted the crystals.
Another presents him with an astromech droid.
They offered their finest in exchange.
Its green head spins around. Cobb shifts his weary gaze and notices something underneath a light against a back wall.
My treasure bought me more than a full water skin.
He points to Boba Fett's suit of Beskar armor. A Jawa holding a droid head points in response.
It bought my freedom.
Scratched and tarnished, the armor hangs unceremoniously among other pieces of junk. Later, suited up in his new treasure with the midday sun at his back, Cobb stands tall in the center of Mos Pelgo. He strides forth into the saloon, a red scarf wrapped around his neck below the helmet. The Weequay proprietor gapes, while his mining collective customers glance over at the newcomer. One of them sets down his cup and backs away from his table. Cobb assesses their numbers. The Weequay subtly gestures to him, and the marshal nods for him to leave. One of the soldiers notices the proprietor backing away from the bar. As he grabs his carbine, Cobb beats him to the draw and begins filling the saloon with blaster fire. One of the soldiers scores a hit, but it bounces harmlessly off the Beskar. Cobb shoots the man down, then holsters his blaster. The Weequay cranes his neck to watch him leave the saloon. Outside, more soldiers scramble to their land speeder. Cobb saunters to the middle of the road to watch them take off. The rangefinder periscope on the side of his helmet swivels into its downward position, and he centers the speeder in his targeting display. Bending over, he fires a missile from his back. It finds its target on the outskirts of the town and culminates in a high explosion. The flashback fades into present day to find Cobb and the Mandalorian speeding their bikes across the desert. Later, they slow down to navigate the shadowy canyons of the Jundland Wastes. Cobb guides the Mandalorian through the dry sandstone ravines. Peering ahead, he signals his travel companion with a raised fist, and they both swing their speeders to a stop. The Mandalorian hops off his bike and shoulders his pulse rifle in one fluid motion. Cobb does the same, taking cover behind his speeder. The child ducks inside his satchel. Cobb takes aim at a ridge above. His aim lowers to ground level, where a massive comes out from behind some rocks. The Mandalorian lowers his rifle a little. An entire pack of the four-legged lizard wolves emerges from all around the canyon. The Mandalorian cups a hand around the mouth of his helmet. The lead massive shuts its fanged jaws and looks up alertly. The Mandalorian calmly steps past Cobb.
What the hell you done?
He signals the marshal to stay put as he moves out in the open before the pack of massives. Cobb relaxes his aim. The lead massive bounds toward the Mandalorian, who crouches and pets it. Cobb watches him scratch it underneath the chin. A band of Tusken Raiders emerges from behind the rocks. The child lifts his head from the satchel to watch as the Mandalorian signals to them. One of them signs back to him.
Hey, partner. You want to tell me what's going on?
They want to kill the Krayt Dragon, too.
Cobb's skeptical reaction wipes away to reveal a Tusken Raider brushing the teeth of a Bantha outside their camp at nightfall. Sconces mounted on tripods offer faint sources of illumination among their domed huts. Nearby, Cobb and the Mandalorian sit around a campfire with other members of the clan. One Tusken stands sentry atop an outcropping. Another walks a massive past the campfire. The Mandalorian converses with a Tusken seated across from him. Seated between his protector's legs, the child perks his ears. A massive stares right at him, licking its chops. One of the Tuskens digs his thumbs into a black egg-shaped item, cracking open its top and releasing a dark cloud of vapor. He offers it to Cobb, who reluctantly accepts. The marshal gives its contents a whiff, then mutters to the Mandalorian beside him.
What am I supposed to do with this?
You drink it.
It stinks.
Do you want their help?
Not if I have to drink this.
Says your people steal their water. Now you insult them by not drinking it. They know about Mos Pelgo. They know how many sand people you killed.
They raided our village. I defended the town.
Lower your voice.
This was a bad idea.
You're agitating them.
These monsters can't be reasoned with. Sit back down before I put a hole through you. I'm not gonna see you.
Mando interrupts them with a jet of fire from his wrist. He continues signing to his Tusken counterpart. Cobb leans in.
What are you telling them?
The same thing I'm telling you. If we fight amongst ourselves, the monster will kill us all.
The Tuskens all settle back down.
Now, how do we kill it?
The image wipes away from his signing to reveal to the next day. The Sand People ride single file through the dunes, with the Mandalorian and Cobb each accompanying them on their own banthas. The satchel with the child lies strapped to one side of Mando's saddle next to his plasma rifle. As the group crests a dune, a rocky canyon comes into view up ahead. Later, a POV through electro-binoculars shows a lone Tusken walking his bantha across a dry plain. Perched atop a cliff, Cobb, the Mandalorian, and three sand people watch him approach the mouth of a cave down below. One of the Tuskens signs to Mando.
They say it lives in there. They say it sleeps.
Another hands him the binoculars for a look.
It lives in an abandoned Sarlacc pit.
I've lived on Tatooine my whole life. There's no such thing as an abandoned Sarlacc pit.
There is if you eat the Sarlacc.
He passes the binoculars down to another Tusken.
They're laying out a bantha to protect the settlement. They've studied its digestion cycle for generations. They feed the dragon to make it sleep longer. Watch. The dragon will appear.
The raider below ties off the bantha to a stake and calls out toward the cave. The child cocks his little green head in fascination. His big black eyes twitch as he gazes down at the distant figures in the valley below. The Tuscan turns away from the cave and begins to run. Cobb watches alertly as the whole valley begins to quake. The crate dragon darts its head out of the cave like an eel. Going right past its sacrificial offering, it gobbles up the fleeing Tuscan instead. The child cowers at the sight of the giant serpent, and the sand people recoil as they watch it recede back into the cave, leaving the bantha untouched.
They might be open to some fresh ideas.
The child timidly lifts his head. A view of the unharmed bantha irises out to reveal the Tuscans in a huddle. At the mouth of a boulder before them, bones are arranged in a serpentine shape in the sand, with tiny pebbles placed in front of it.
What are the bones?
That's the crate dragon.
And those little rocks?
That's us.
It's not this scale.
I think it is.
Can't be, that's too big.
The Mandalorian signs.
It's to scale.
I've only seen its head and neck. That's a whole lot bigger than I guessed. Might be time to rethink our arrangement.
One of the Tuscans gestures with his fist stomping across his forearm. The Mandalorian responds by waving one hand back and forth inside his other palm. His counterpart sprinkles more pebbles in the sand.
That's more like it. Where are they getting the reinforcements?
I volunteered your village.
Off Cobb's wide-eyed look, the image wipes away to the two of them cruising their speeders back across the sun-bleached desert. They return to Mos Pelgo and park their repulsor craft outside the saloon.
They attacked us less than a year ago. Killed half a dozen of us by the mining camp.
Sad, took down about twice as many Tuscans.
The town respects you. My guess is they'll listen to reason.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Cobb heads up the front steps to the deck. Now the villagers are all gathered inside.
This here is a Mandalorian. You know what that means?
Oh, we've heard the stories.
Then you know how good they are at killing. Now, this one's got a problem. I got a suit of salvaged armor, and the Mandalorian Creed says it's his to take. But I've got a problem, too. A crate dragon has been peeling off our pack animals and sometimes taking our mining haul with it. It's just a matter of time before it grows tired of banthas and goes after a couple of you townsfolk or even, so help us, the school. As much as I've grown fond of the armor, I'm even more fond of this town. The Mandalorian is willing to help us slay the Leviathan in exchange for returning the armor to its ancestral owners.
Well, that settles it.
There's more. We can't take on the crate alone. And the Sand People are willing to help.
They raid our mines! They're monsters!
I've seen the size of that thing. It will swallow your entire town when the fancy hits it. You're lucky Mos Pelgo isn't a sand field already. I know these people. They are brutal. But so is the Dune Sea. They have survived for thousands of years in these sands, and they know the Great Dragon better than anyone here. They are raiders, it's true, but they also keep their word. We have struck a deal. If we are willing to leave them the carcass and its ichor, they will stand by our side in battle and vow never to raise a blaster against this town until one of you breaks the peace.
The townsfolk trade humbled looks. At a storage facility on the outskirts of town, Cobb and the Mandalorian watch them move around supplies.
Think it'll work?
It better. Joining forces is their only hope.
A villager opens a crate and hands off charges down a line. Cobb and the Mandalorian step out of the adobe-like sandstone building. Pausing on the front deck, they eye a train of Banthas arriving from beyond a sand dune. Arms akimbo, Cobb quirks his mouth to one side. A townswoman taps a neighbor on the arm, prompting him to turn and watch the procession. Some of the sand people ride doubled up on their Banthas, while others walk their Banthas laden with supplies. The two Tuscans leading the train survey the townsfolk, their true faces cloaked behind their customary face wrappings, goggles, and mouth grills. A man wearing a cap with ear flaps puts his hands on his hips as he watches them. Another man squints inhospitably. The townsfolk stand their ground as the procession grows near. Cobb and the Mandalorian remain tense. Now, a Tuscan stands guard while his brethren work together with the humans, passing each other cylindrical charges and loading them on their Banthas. One of the sand people drops an explosive.
Hey, what are you doing? That's an explosive! What, are you trying to blow the whole place up? What? Is that one?
Take it easy. It was an accident. Okay?
What do you want to do?
It was an accident.
As the townsfolk stand down, Cobb turns to the Mandalorian.
It's gonna be great.
Later, a view from the base of a dune shows the pack of Banthas trekking single file up along the ridge. They wind their way along the snaking undulations of sand toward the rocky Jundland wastes. Riding their repulsor lift vehicles, Cobb and the Mandalorian chug alongside the woolly, explosive-laden pack animals. The Banthas amble slowly along, each mounted with a single Tuscan rider. The ground beneath them begins to harden as they reach the outskirts of the craggy mountain land. An aerial view glides over the caravan, which resembles a softly bending spinal column with its evenly spaced single line of Banthas. They arrive within view of the dragon's lair. As the caravan comes to a stop, the villagers of Mos Pelgo scramble into action alongside the Tuscan raiders. They begin unloading the explosive charges from netting saddled around the Banthas. One man carries a metal case in one hand and a coiled rope on the opposite hip as the blended party cautiously approaches a ridge overlooking the flatland that leads to the mouth of the cave. Down below, a lone Tuscan raider makes his way toward the shadowy hollow. Back with the others, a Bantha cocks its woolly head side to side. While everyone stands watching the lone figure, a Tuscan looks trepidatiously toward the Mandalorian. The scout shifts his long cycler rifle to one hand, gets down on a knee, and lays his other palm flat to the ground. The child watches him intently from back in his satchel. The scout lifts his head and peers into the yawning cave mouth in front of him. Dwarfed by the dark void, he rises back to his feet. The Mandalorian watches him sign from a distance.
What'd he say?
He says it's sleeping. If we listen carefully, we can hear it breathing.
A Tuscan passes a black egg to Cobb, who eyes it hesitantly. He drinks from it. The Mandalorian shifts on his feet.
Let's get to work.
A bustle of activity unfolds all around him. The human villagers move to and from the Banthas, carrying charges and shovels.
The Tuscans say the belly is the only weak spot. So we have to hit it from below.
They dig a pit in the sand.
First, we bury the charges at the opening of the cave.
The Tuscans assemble a ballista.
Then we wake it up. We have to get it angry enough to charge.
They load a huge barbed bolt inside and aim it at the cave. Meanwhile, the villagers carefully bury the charges in the pit with red diodes aglow on their tail ends.
Once it's far enough out, the belly is above the explosives. You hit the detonator.
A Tuscan raider helps shovel sand over the charges. A villager with long dreadlocks draping out beneath her cap brings Cobb the detonator.
Careful, Marshal.
Thank you, Joe. And you stay safe, huh?
Joe nods as she quickly heads off. Cobb looks down at the detonator in his hand, then over at the Mandalorian. The two of them stride forward. They pause a safe distance from the sand people positioned in front of the cave. A few of them walk their Banthas back from the firing line of ballistas. Each one has a team in position to man the catapult. Our focus shifts from one of the barbed spear tips to a trio of sand people walking forward from the line. They approach the mouth of the cave. Two of them are armed with cycler rifles, the third with a gaffy stick. They pause a few meters from the opening. Moving aside their weapons, they cup their hands around their mouth grills. Our view inches slowly toward the gaping black void. The trio turns tail and flees. A sinkhole forms in the sand, charging after them from the mouth of the cave. The dragon's head emerges from the ground to reveal teeth the size of stalactites. Cobb's lips draw apart as he takes in the scale of the beast. One by one, the ballistas begin to unleash their bolts, harpooning the dragon in its gums. Two members of the trio make it to the firing line, but the third falls behind and trips in the sand. The beast's mighty jaws come down on the hapless Tusken. The Mandalorian watches through his scope as the dragon slithers backwards toward its cave.
Dang, Ferrick, it's going back in.
The teams of sand people rush in to reinforce the harpoon lines, one of which snaps loose from the beast's hide. Another line pulls its anchor stake from the ground and yanks the team off its feet. They manage to hang on as they're dragged along. Others rush in blasting.
It's retreating.
I'm gonna hit it.
No, wait. We only have one shot. We've got to get it out.
Villagers hurl projectiles at the giant dragon, but the small arms burst ineffectively against its hide. The Weequay and others fire cycler rifles. The dragon moves forward again, baring its rows of teeth, but the Tuskens and townfolk stand their ground. Finally, they retreat as its jaws come snapping down in a great cloud of sand.
No.
Not yet. It's gotta come out further.
The Mandalorian continues to watch the action through his scope. The team of raiders fire another round of harpoons from their ballistas, then pull taut on the rope lines. As the beast slithers toward them, they reel the slack through their hands. The dragon widens its gaping maw. Its head shakes, yanking four more sand people high into the air. Seeing it slosh its tongue around in its mouth, the villagers flee. The Tuskens hold their ground a beat longer before following. Coming after them, the beast belches forth a stream of bile. It melts the fleeing Tuskens like acid.
Almost. Almost.
Ow!
Cobb hits the charge. A huge explosion erupts from beneath the dragon. The resulting jet stream buffets the child's ears. Some of them knocked off their feet, the villagers and Tuskens brace themselves against the shockwave of sand. The ground beneath the crate dragon appears to liquefy. As the cloud of dust and sand blots out any sign of the beast, people begin helping each other back to their feet. The villagers gawk at the space where they last saw the dragon. They venture forward, one of them pointing. A few Tuskens accompany them, wielding their cycler rifles. Cobb eyeballs the dissipating debris cloud.
I don't think it's dead.
Me either.
A Tusken scans the ground that lies before him. Cobb and the Mandalorian lift their gazes to the mountain and see the dragon's head breaching the peaks. It vomits out another stream of acid at its tormentors below. A few hapless Tuskens are vaporized on impact.
It's picking us off like warp rats.
Let's get after it.
Cobb and the Mandalorian grab their rifles, causing the child to blink his curious eyes. The Marshal puts on Boba Fett's helmet, then they both engage their jetpacks and streak into the sky. Left behind in his satchel at the rear of the speeder bike, the child watches them swoop down at the dragon. They take cover behind a sandy ridge. They both open fire, but the dragon shows no reaction.
This ain't doing a thing! Just keep shooting!
They land shots around a tiny recessed eye at the side of its head until it finally takes notice of them. Its crocodilian jaws open wide. Cobb and the Mandalorian jet off just before the dragon's teeth chomp down on the entire ridge. They descend to the canyon floor and wheel back around with their guns poised. An avalanche of debris clouds the mountain crest, with the giant monster nowhere to be seen. Unable to get a bead on their target, a group of sand people slowly lower their cycler rifles. Cobb and the Mandalorian keep their guns aimed at the mountaintop. Everyone turns to find the dragon bursting out of the sand behind them.
There
It noses through the ground like it's water, driving the hunting party toward its cave. The Mandalorian spots a panicked Bantha strapped with charges.
I've got an idea. Get its attention.
Cobb engages his helmet's periscope and targets the dragon. Firing a missile, he scores a direct hit. The dragon changes direction and charges straight at him.
I got its attention. Now what?
You still have that detonator?
Take it. What's the plan?
You're gonna take care of the child.
What are you gonna do?
I don't know, but wish me luck.
He hits Cobb's jetpack, causing him to blast off into the sky, then arms the charges on the Bantha. Seeing the dragon coming its way, the woolly beast pulls free from a stake it's tethered to. The Mandalorian grabs its rope to keep it from leaving. The dragon descends upon them rapidly. Its head rears up and dives into the sand, swallowing them whole. The others watch as the dragon's enormous serpentine body slithers back below the earth, which instantly reverts to its solid state. Cobb comes tumbling into a rough landing. He pulls off his helmet. The child's ears droop worriedly. Standing among townsfolk, a Tusken lowers his rifle. Others look around on edge, keeping a safe distance from the mouth of the cave. A Tusken scans the ground as it begins to quake. The dragon breaches again and opens its mouth. Shocking it from inside with his rifle, the Mandalorian shoots out on his jetpack and thumbs the detonator in midair. A shockwave buffets the hunting party on the ground. The Mandalorian descends for a heroic landing as the mighty behemoth falls dead behind him in a cloud of debris. He plants his long-armed rifle in the ground like a staff, one final arc of St. Elmo's fire worming its way up the two electroshock prongs. Everyone else picks themselves up off the ground. They hold their weapons in the air in celebration. A number of the townsfolk put their arm around each other. Cobb grins in awe at the Mandalorian, who stands tall for another moment before striding forth. An aerial view reveals the totality of the smoldering carcass, which fills the valley like the wreckage of an aircraft. The sand people move in and begin hacking meat off bones that stand as tall as columns. One of them chops away with a scythe, his robe stained red with blood. Townsfolk come to the edge of the ribcage and watch their newfound allies field-dress the mighty kill from inside the carcass. Nearby, the child curiously pokes at a hunk of meat that's bigger than he is. The Mandalorian straps it to his speeder bike under a fold of cloth.
Sorry, I didn't have time to explain.
No need.
Cobb gives him the armor.
This was well earned.
It was my pleasure.
They shake hands.
I hope our paths cross again.
As do I.
Oh, and you tell your people I wasn't the one that broke that.
He points to the armor as he walks away. A Tusken digs inside a mass of tissue. He holds up a giant pearl. Others shake their rifles and gaffy stakes overhead in celebration. The Mandalorian mounts his bike. He throttles into a tight turn and shoots out across the sandy canyon toward mesas on the horizon, leaving a wispy trail of dust in his wake. A panoramic perspective from atop a ridge shows him speeding off against a backdrop of the planet's two setting suns. A cloaked figure with a pale, bald head comes into view, a gaffy stick and cycler rifle strapped across his back. He watches the distant rider head off into the sunset, then turns around to reveal his dour, scarred face. As he strides forth, the picture cuts to black. Audio description by Deluxe, funded by Disney Plus Originals, voiced by Nicole Zanzarella.